Just down in some root beer here.
Oh, you're drinking it?
Yep. I drank the Coney Island first before I got on here.
Oh, this is so this is part of the show then.
If you want, you yes. do you do okay. I drank the Coney Island first and I liked it, but it was too birch beery, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
And I don't like birch beer. But it was still good because it has alcohol in it. Anything with alcohol is good. I am now drinking the Not Your Father's root beer. And I like this one much better. It's now, got a sweeter, softer taste.
Right. I'm definitely in the minority when it comes to not liking the Not Your Father's root beer one.
Okay.
Most people who drink and try them on a regular basis like that one better.
Mm-hmm. And at some point, you'll probably hear me crack open the Best Damn root beer. So I'm going for the I'm going for the trifecta here tonight. So I know they'll all have like I'll taste them all in the same time. So like if I drank some of them over like a course of a couple of days, I'd be like, all right, did I like this one better? Right now, I know I definitely like the Not Your Father's root beer over the Coney Island. And I'll know in a few minutes the Best Damned over every, like, whether or not, where that falls into the three. But if anything, right now, the Best Damn root beer is probably, you know, would go in my repertoire of killing my liver.
And when I was out in AIW this past weekend, I looked in their cooler of beer that they sell during during the show, and they did not have any of the other one that's not good.
Ah.
So I can get the name of that one. But it's not locally available around here anyway, so.
So they sell, A&W sells hard root beer?
Yes, but it's horrible.
Oh, boy. Root beer wrestling is official.
Mm-hmm. If only they had their own brand, you know what I mean?
Oh, just cooking it up in an ash tub.
They, you know what? So they do a podcast, right?
Mm-hmm.
And their podcast is there's certain episodes of the podcast I think you would enjoy,
right?
Like a lot of times it'll be like, oh, here's this wrestler that Todd has no idea who it is, but here's a bunch of crazy stories of him like whipping his dick out at a Denny's, or having breakfast, lunch, and dinner of lemon drop shots and breaded marshmallow or breaded mushrooms.
That sounds like a delightful breakfast, by the way.
Here's well, that was breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Mm.
He had three meals of that. Here's the time that we ran a show in the parking lot of a dorm on this campus in Ohio and booked the Honky Tonk Man, who may or may not have just sat in the corner while guys had sex with other women and also conned the people out of McDonald's for free fries.
Oh,
so
my
it's
God.
Stories like that, right?
Right. And all the bumps that Honky Tonk Man took.
Oh, yes. All zero of them.
Like his email says. But anyway.
So this past week's episode was them reading emails that they get from people either looking to be booked or looking to become part of the creative team or the writing team at AIW, or people who are oil tycoons attempting to get them to, I don't want to say white slavery, a certain female wrestler, but there was definitely intimations of white slavery involved.
Oh boy.
And you mean, like, and he's like, listen, if you guys can send me matches of this girl, we're in the matches. She's either fighting a really fat woman, is bloodied on her face, or both. I have millions and billions and trillions of dollars that I can send you to make this happen.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
Where I'm going... what was that?
No, I was going to say, are you sure it's not like a Nigerian prince?
No, no.
Okay, it's not a scam?
Those ones out pretty good. These, Chandler and John are really sharp. But where I was going with this is, their new sponsor for their podcast is a methadone clinic in Florida.
Oh, boy. Oh, condone the methadone.
So if that's not a better way to start off episode 119 of Longbox Heroes After Dark, Gallifrey Birds Roman numeral 2, I don't know what is.
Ah, and just for the record, I have cracked open the best damn root beer.
Okay.
And I'm drinking it, but I'm waiting for the after, like, you know how you have to wait to get the full taste? Like,
yeah.
Because after a few. It is tied for second of my favorites. So the best damn root beer in the Coney Island are too harsh.
Okay.
I like not, you know what I mean by harsh. It's not like, oh my God, I can't do a drink of root beer. But I like the smoothness of not the best damn. Or no, wait, not your father's. Not your father's. That's my favorite. So there you go.
The not your father's is also on tap at more places in this area.
And that's what I'll probably give a try. I want to try it on tap because on tap is usually good.
Right. And see the thing, and you know, and I tried them all three different ways. I did them on tap. I did them bottles and I did them in cans. The Coney Island I did in cans first and I didn't like it at all. But now in bottles, I really enjoy it.
Mm. Probably really what
I remember. The other thing that I wanted to mention before we get into this is going to be a long episode, ladies and gentlemen. So hunker down.
So fasten your seatbelt. What were you going to ask me?
No, go ahead. You had something. I remember. What
no,
I wanted
just
to mention.
Just other in cans on anything. I'm not a big fan of alcoholic beverages.
Neither am I. Like, but that
I'm a bottle man, but or a tap man. But go ahead.
Right, can is not the preferred method for drinking beer, but for me. For a soda, it goes fountain, can, bottle. Only because most places don't have the glass bottles.
You know what? Fair enough. I pretty much would do the same thing, unless it was a glass bottle. Then glass bottle jumps to the top.
Right.
Especially older sodas when they used to use real sugar and stuff like that. That's why I like that Mexican Coke.
I was going to say, you know, after last week's Longbox Heroes, I was going to mention the Mexican Coke and see how things were coming along in the filming of the Page movie, but those are two different unrelated things.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, so we talked last week on After Dark about comedy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to dive too deep into comedy discussion here because then we won't get to anything else.
We'll save it for another show.
Right, but I do want to mention and throw a shout out to listener Dwayne Carter, who emailed us this week.
Mm-hmm.
To let us know that not only is Bob Nelson still alive, he has a unfortunately not stellar online presence.
Okay.
And by that I mean, I have like 5 times the followers he does.
Oh my God, that's sad.
That's very sad.
We're gonna have to hire some click farms to take care of Bob
and
Nelson.
He was previously, and again, I don't know if they're still taking. I'm looking at their calendar, but he was doing it. Did you get a chance to look at the website or anything?
No.
So it's a lot of stuff in Florida, right?
Mm-hmm.
Florida, Georgia, then they got like an assorted one in like Milwaukee, where they're doing like a weekend in Milwaukee. But the tour is Artie Fletcher, who I'm aware of on the fringes of comedy, Bob Nelson, and the headliner. Todd, since you did not check the website, I'm going to let you guess who the headliner is.
Please tell me it's the legendary Wid.
I wish.
Okay.
If it was the legendary Wid, I would have to take the name back of Chikarison just so I can get the copter out of storage so we could fly to wherever the next show was.
Right.
But close. Gallagher.
Oh my, he's out of retirement.
It's Gallagher, Bob Nelson, and Artie Fletcher.
Mm.
That's a comedy tour that's happening in 2017.
And that's a comedy tour that Todd would want to see. I'm looking up Artie Fletcher, but those two, I think, you know, because I know, you know, we are around the same era of watching comedians, so I'm guessing I would know who he is.
Yeah, like, it's not like he's like, oh, he's the guy who's been in everything. But he's a name that I recognize. You know what I mean?
I once probably, what I'm saying is I probably once saw him on TV and standing in front of a brick wall with a microphone.
Right. On A&E, on a 4 o'clock, or, you know, whenever it was on, you know?
Right. Evening at the Improv.
Evening at the Improv. All right, so let's get into Gallifrey Birds Roman numeral 2. If you're unfamiliar with this, we're going to do this once a month for the calendar year of 2017, where Todd is watching a wrestling event handpicked by me, and I am watching a series of episodes of Doctor Who that we're going doctor by doctor. We are currently on the second Doctor.
Patrick Troughton, yes.
Right. We'll save my remarks for Doctor Who and so forth for the second part of the show. We're going to let Todd kick things off with his discussions and thoughts and feelings about the World Wrestling Entertainment's Royal Rumble from 1992.
That's right, the 1992 Regal Ruckus.
Mm-hmm.
So you gave me what I needed to watch, and I watched the opening, whatever, like the pre-show.
Yes, and I gave you the pre-show last time on the Great American Bash one, and you said that it caused more confusion than anything.
Well, because I didn't know a lot of, I knew all the wrestlers, but I didn't know who they were. Like, I've heard of them, basically, is what to say. It's not like, so I didn't know their feuds. I knew who Ric Flair was, and I really never saw Terry Funk wrestle before, because he, when I was in the Attitude Era and stuff like that, he really wasn't running around doing that much, that I remember. But this one, I am so glad that you put this on there.
Okay.
Because I have to say, one, I was shocked it wasn't on the network, that it was a pay-per-view. But I know there was no network back then. But I was going to rank all the wrestlers in the pre-show by who was the most coked up for their promos.
Okay.
But they all get an award.
It was a tie for first?
It was a tie for first, except for two disqualifications.
Okay.
I don't know who they are. There were two bigger fat men. Was it like Tugboat, maybe?
That would be Earthquake and Typhoon. Typhoon was formerly Tugboat, so you get half a point.
All right. I would like to say that those guys showed up and missed out on the coke, in my opinion, or they don't do coke. And they were like, to do a promo, what do we have to do? Well, let's watch them. All right, they're all coked out of their minds. All right, let's do our promo. Do you have any coke? No. Do you know where we can get some coke? No. So they are two guys pretending to do a promo on coke.
I thought you were going to say that they were angry that the coke was all gone.
It could have been that.
Focus on that anger. That. Use that anger in your promo.
That's right. And scene. You know what I mean? When I'm watching them, I'm like, those are two guys who are trying to do a lot of energy and not getting it. It's not there, so they're faking the amperage that everybody else is on.
Sure.
Everybody else is on. Then, who is Sid Justice?
Todd, do you remember a time in WCW where a man went to the second rope and he did a jump kick to Scott Steiner, and then he landed on his other leg, and then the leg that landed on the canvas was perfectly fine and didn't obliterate into dust?
It wasn't like a bag of loose meat, is what you're saying? Yes,
that's Sid Justice.
Oh, that's Sid Justice? Because if something happened to that leg, it would be absolutely vicious. But that's neither here nor there. So I found that amusing. Except for him, Sid Justice seemed to got the pot, not the coke.
All right.
Because he was low-key. And I want to know who did his poodle hair. That was what I thought was in.
He's had that luscious, curly hair his entire career.
I know. I love it. I love it. I love it. So basically, I have to maybe give... I'm trying to think who gets the number... They all tie for number one. But I'm trying to think, maybe it's Hogan or Flair. But my favorite thing in the pre-show is Hogan saying that he was at Titan Tower or whatever it is.
Right.
Titan building, and he was off doing the I's and dotting the T's or something, and I'm like, he doesn't even know what he's saying at this point. But it, what?
And I was going to say, and that's a more sedate Hulkster promo. You dip into like 86 to 88, and like his eyes are just like saucers in his promos. He never blinks. He's constantly shaking.
And who's the president of the WWF at that time?
Jack Tunney.
Jack Tunney.
Yes. All right,
so
the real Jack president.
Hey, I have no doubt that he was the real president. But the whole thing to make the Royal Rumble happen was that there was a bunch of sketchy finishes.
Right.
From these matches with Ric Flair and Undertaker and Hogan and everything. And my favorite part of it was that the ashes fall out. The last time the ashes fall out of
the urn,
and he throws them in Undertaker's face. And, you know, there's dubious things with Ric Flair. And he gets them in the roll up. And I'm thinking to myself, this is like literally not a clean pin because he's got ashes all over his face. So I found that completely amusing, but it works in the narrative that it's like, okay, we're just going to do a Royal Rumble where whoever wins it gets the title.
Undisputed champion for the first time in World Wrestling Entertainment history.
And have they ever done it since?
They did it one more time since. But it was last year when Roman Reigns was the champion.
Uh-oh.
He was forced to go in at number one, and therefore his title was on the line in the Royal Rumble.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I liked was them showing the barbershop.
Oh, yes. One of the most infamous moments in professional wrestling history.
So, what's his name? Bobby Generic?
I have no idea who you mean. I really don't.
The guy that Shawn Michaels is talking to.
Marty Jannetty?
Oh, Marty Jannetty. I thought his name was like Marty Generic or something like that. But so they were part of the Rockers, maybe?
They were the tag team, the Rockers. Tag team specialists, if you would.
So they have a falling out.
Right.
They have a falling out. And now in the barbershop, they're gonna get back together. And Marty's like, I'm gonna turn around, and I'm gonna put my hand out. And there are many things that go through my mind as I'm watching this. One is that he puts his hand out, and then Shawn Michaels shakes it. And I'm like, oh, they're friends again. This is going to be perfect forever. And then he super kicks him. He has a super kick party, and it, you know, he lays him out. But the best part of it is the brain. The brain going like... The brains, like, they need each other. They're back together. I knew it. They can't, survive without each other. And then he kicks him. He's like, oh, I knew it. I knew it. They don't need each other, right? So Gorilla's going crazy telling him to shut up or whatever. And then he throws him through the barbershop window. And Brain literally says, look at it. Marty's trying to escape by jumping through the window. And I'm like, at this point, and down the line at other stuff, I'm like, I think most of my shtick is, wrestling shtick is almost stolen from Bobby the Brain Heenan at a time.
Steal from the best. What are you going to do, you know?
Copy an A, get an A.
Yep.
But, so all this is fascinating. I love the opening thing. The other thing that I might still do is, I can't because I deleted the video. I was going to take screen captures of all the pictures that come up. It's like this on the Royal Rumble. It's Tanaka in the Royal Rumble.
And Tatanka.
Tatanka. I don't know these names.
Tanaka. Oh my goodness.
Hulk Hogan. And,
right.
And Roddy Piper. And the pictures that they're using are like terrible mugshot / high school, like their high school yearbook photos.
Those were the best pictures they could find of those guys.
So flattering. Absolutely flattering on these pictures. So now the Royal Rumble starts, and the first match I watched was the Orient Express.
Right.
Versus the New Foundation.
Was correct. That?
And the first thing I noticed was that the New Foundations were dressed like checkered taxi cabs, which I found fantastic. That's literally what they were. And then the Orient Express comes out with Mr. Fuji, who, we're going to get into this later, I don't think he need that cane to walk. I'm just saying that right now.
You don't think so?
I think it might have been a clever ruse.
You think he might have been using it for nefarious purposes, Todd?
Nefarious purposes, possibly. So then the Orient Express comes out, and Brain starts ragging on them that they're in their pajamas. And I'm like, he's commenting on their wardrobe. I am stealing from Bobby the Brain. I've just stolen from whole cloth the Brain shtick. But, hey, it works for me.
Right.
So now I'm watching this match, and Owen Hart and Jim the Anvil Neidhart are going at it. And the one thing I will say is, I knew him for a little bit before the tragic act. Not knew him, but I've seen him.
We're aware of him.
Aware of him. Owen, oh my God. Especially in 1992.
Yes.
That was over the top. Like, him jumping off the rope and doing stuff. I'm like, all right, Owen could wrestle.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they have the upper hand on the Orient Express. And then he tags in the Anvil. And Joe, the Anvil wrestles like a guy who would shake your hand really hard. He just goes in there, and there's no finesse. He's just pushing people over and knocking people down. And I'm like, I actually kind of like this tag team. I like the actual wrestling, and then Anvil's just crushing people. Just,
now, Jim Neidhart, a former Oakland Raider.
I vaguely remember that. I don't remember watching him play. I would have been a little young.
Right.
But I remember that. So was Carl Weathers, but that's a whole other story. But yeah, I like this match. And then Mr. Fuji puts his cane up on the
top turnbuckle, rope, sure.
And they throw the guy into him, and I'm like, oh my God, so the ref needs to see this, and I don't trust Mr. Fuji. And they said the cane broke, and he's still walking around, so that's why I think he doesn't need it. But that's just me. Maybe he does need it, and it was all adrenaline, and he could walk, but I think there was a trick there.
Right, he saw his men were in danger and leapt to their aid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like when a mother is able to lift a car off their son.
So, at the end of that, I don't even remember who won that match, but I enjoyed it. Was it the New Foundation?
I think so.
And then there was now, a Mountie promo.
After. Right. Now, keep it. Well, I'll let Todd finish this up because I did not have Todd watch the entire show. So,
okay.
Go on. The Mountie as a promo.
Was there something in between that match and
the
Mountie?
No, it's in between the next two things, like after the Mountie stuff. And, yeah.
Right. So I'm watching the Mountie promo, and all I can focus on is his huge mirrored glasses.
Right.
Like, I'm like, I don't even know what's going on. I didn't know at the time what that was. I thought he had a road flare in his hand, but later on I found out it was a taser stick or something. A cattle prod. I don't know these technical things. But that, and then Jimmy Hart was there, and he had, as every good manager has, a cane, a tennis racket. Every good manager has
a prop,
and he had the megaphone. And I figured out that Jimmy Hart's father was probably Crazy Harry from the Muppets because he has that manic, like, Muppet, like, laugh and movements. So I'm pretty sure the Mouth of the South is half Muppet. I can't prove it. I need a DNA test, but I think he's a Muppet. I really enjoyed that promo.
Jimmy Hart trivia for you.
Okay.
Jimmy Hart was in the band The Gentrys, who did the song Keep on Dancing.
Okay.
That's all.
I would like to go back to the pre-show.
Go ahead.
Because I don't have it in my notes. I remember who won the coked up thing. It was Piper. I'm sorry. It was Piper. Now I remember. I didn't write that down. Because after that, we get to the Piper promo. And the coke is still in go.
Right.
He is, you know, like, he hasn't come down. And he's talking about how Now, who did he wrestle?
He's getting ready to wrestle the Mountie.
The Mountie. And he's like, the Mountie says he's coming to get my integrity. Well, that's like Jacques who's still looking for a dry spot in the ocean. And I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? And then he's like, he's coming after my manhood. And I don't know about that. I just want to fight. And I'm like, oh, my God. And then he says, you've been having dreams, and I'm pretty sure they've all been wet. And I'm like, did anybody check these tapes?
Nope.
Before there? Does he just get to just do promo powder beforehand?
Yes.
And then say whatever he likes?
Yes.
Okay, I'm not going to go looking for anything because I don't want to ruin any of the wrestling things that you have coming up for me.
All right.
But I'm looking forward to, as you said to me, like you want certain stuff in your Doctor Who, I'm looking for classic Piper promos because there seems to be something there.
Some sort of magic in the air, you would say?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the Piper match happens, and I have to admit, him coming down to the music and everything that's going on, and once again, as we get to the match, the cocaine's still there. He comes out like a man on fire, and he's wrestling. I just enjoy a good Piper-Mountie match as much as the next guy. As you once told me, Mountie was one of the few guys who got a clean pin on Hogan.
Right. So,
but I enjoyed this match. It's fun to see Piper, but once again, the wrestling isn't so much what I'm looking for. It's more the fun stuff with Rowdy. Now, while this is going on, I'm starting to notice a theme with Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Uh-oh.
That he really needs to know what number Ric Flair has.
Correct.
And he keeps coming up with all these insane things. He's like, oh, like, do you need me here to do the match? Like, do you want a hot dog, Gorilla? I'm going to go get you a hot dog. I know how you like them with extra bun. I'm like, who gets their hot dogs with extra bun? So, like, and I want to, like, point out all, I'm like, I'm going to comment on Brain's jokes, but they are just, he is just a machine gun.
Yes.
In this. And I'm cracking up, like, every 2 seconds, and I'm like, this is fantastic, and I wish I had started from the beginning and counted how many times Gorilla told Bobby, could you please be serious?
Will you stop?
Yes, will you just stop? And it just keeps going. So now Gorilla as the straight man and tweaking Bobby is fantastic. Like, I don't care about any of these matches at this point. I'm fully engrossed in the commentary that it might be some of the best commentary I've ever listened to in my entire life.
Okay.
And so, like, that's going on. And then Piper wins the match. He wins the Intercontinental Championship, which the fact that he's never had a belt in the WWE up till this point
right.
blows my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Blows my mind. I know he never won the championship, which is a crime against humanity. Just a crime.
Now, but I'll say this as devil's advocate. There are certain guys like him, and like let's just say as an example, another guy like Jake the Snake Roberts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Up until this point, Roddy had never held a title in the WWF. He had held titles in other promotions and everything else like that, but really WWF at the time is like the big game, right?
Right.
But there are certain guys who didn't need the title.
Oh, no.
Because everything else in their act got them over, where there were other people, it's like, they need that little extra something, they'll be like the Intercontinental Champion, or, you know, whatever it is. Whereas a guy like Jake the Snake Roberts, or a guy like Roddy Piper, who were just themselves and didn't need the title, or very rarely would even, you know, Jake the Snake is someone who very rarely even competed for the title in his career.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so Roddy wins the title. I do just want to mention this. They would later go on to have a rematch, the Mountie and Roddy Piper.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mountie would jump Roddy Piper before the bell, before Roddy can get his his shirt and his kilt off.
Mm-hmm.
And behind the referee's back, he gave him the gimmick with the shock stick, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Roddy was ready for him. Underneath his t-shirt, he reveals after the match, he is wearing a shockproof vest. And Todd, how do you know it's a shockproof vest? In giant white letters across the front, it says, shockproof vest.
Oh my goodness, that's fantastic. As though this is a thing
that exists in real life that you can just buy off the street or off the rack.
Oh. And I find it fascinating that he's trying for the double belt.
Right, and again, Roddy Piper attempting to make history as the first man to win both singles titles in the same night.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing to be one champion and go for the other and win and vice versa, or whatever it was. But like I said, Roddy had the opportunity to win both belts, come in with no belts, leave with both belts.
Mm-hmm.
Unprecedented.
So that was a good match. Then a commercial happens.
Okay, for WrestleMania 8?
Yes.
WrestleMania 8.
So now...
from the Indiana Hoosier Dome.
What, you let me... yes, slow down, son. Because at this point, Vince has gotten his share of cocaine to do the promo. Are you ready for a bunch of cocaine jokes for the rest of this
review?
Because basically he's like, Mania roars into the Hoosier Dome. And I'm like, what is happening? Like, Vince is just out of his mind on this. And it makes your impersonation of him at the comic shop
seem sedate, like, and subtle.
Okay, like, Vince just woke up and he's groggy. This is like, oh my god, because I was listening to it through a set of headphones. I had to turn it down. I'm like, oh my god, blow my eardrums out, Vince. Like, lay off. And it comes around again, so I didn't review it the second time because it was the same perfect promo.
There's one that I should send you, but I'm not even going to bother to send you because... it's literally a 15-second promo to hype up a pay-per-view special that they were going to do, where you were able to get on pay-per-view No Holds Barred the movie,
mm-hmm.
and then No Holds Barred the match, which would be, of course, the great film No Holds Barred, followed up by Macho Man and Zeus against Hulk Hogan and Brutus Beefcake in a steel cage,
mm-hmm.
for one low price, whatever it is. So the promo for this is Vince, and I'm going to do this to the best of my ability without waking up the entire neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It's Vince. The entire promo is, why have a Merry Christmas when you can have a No Holds Barred Christmas? And that's exactly how he says it. And that's the whole commercial.
I would rent that. I would buy that. I would totally pay for view that. That's fantastic. So happens. Now, I've forgotten that I have to jump ahead.
Okay.
In this. So I don't know if I I start watching the Bushwhackers promo.
With Jameson.
With Jameson, who's eating his tie the whole time. And then he's going to, or as I call him, is he Saul Rosenberg? Is that what he's doing? Because that voice is like, he's like, oh, I'm going to beat him up. And I'm like, all right.
This episode's going to be 9 hours.
So, I'm sorry.
Dude. No, it's okay. I'm all for it. This is what we wanted this to be.
Mm-hmm.
So you talked before about the interplay between Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon.
Mm-hmm.
There was a show that was on Mondays before Monday Night Raw. It was called Primetime Wrestling. That essentially was 2 hours with a couple matches in between it, and it was just all Bobby and Gorilla shtick the whole time. And it got to a point where Bobby was sick and tired of Gorilla, so it was a 2-hour show. They decided to turn the second hour of the show into the Bobby Heenan show, where it was Bobby Heenan hosting a talk show. Jameson was his sidekick, and they just didn't explain it. It's just like, Bobby Heenan's like, I can get anybody off the street to be my sidekick. That's how great I am. So he pulls this bum Jameson out, who then becomes, like, a character recurring on the show. And then Bobby would, like, interview just, like, oh, here's this guy's, like, friend who's a fat woman. Let's interview her. Here's this woman who's a porn star, because the company that runs Coliseum Video also is H&H Video, who was doing porn at the time. You know, let's interview her. And then the whole, like, the whole crux of the interview is Bobby can't quite figure out that she's coming right out and saying that she's a porno star. That's where Jameson's from.
Fantastic. I need to find at
all
some
right.
point.
I'm certain what? That all of the episodes of the Bobby Heenan show of that era, I think there was only like five or six before USI is like, hey, this is supposed to be a wrestling show, not a bullshit show. Come on, guys, let's go. that they put the kibosh on it after like five episodes.
Yeah, so basically the whole Bushwhackers promo was pretty much the Bushwhackers having seizures while Jameson ate his thigh.
Right.
So then they go to the match, and I didn't watch the whole match, but realizing that maybe this was right around the time that I was supposed to jump forward, I checked, but before I did that, it was the Beverly Brothers versus the Bushwhackers.
Right.
And they come out with their strut, which is as nowhere as good as the New Day skip. I'm just going to put that out there.
Okay.
And Gorilla's like, the Bushwhackers, they've been whacking their way all around the WWF. And I'm right. like, this is fantastic. And then somebody called Child Services because one of them licked a kid on the way to the ring. He literally licked his face, and I'm like, all right, let me check where I have to jump forward. And as I'm watching this, they just did their strut. For 6 minutes.
Right.
Before the match started. I'm like, yeah, this is definitely where Joe told me to skip. So I ended up not even watching the match. I'm like, thank God. I wasted this amount of time on this. So I jump to Piper's promo after winning the belt.
Yes. Now, Todd, after cutting a promo and wrestling a grueling match, I'm sure this is a very sedate, low-key Roddy Piper promo.
Nope, the cocaine is in full effect. He just goes, and he's babbling. I don't even remember what he says. And then I'm pretty sure he says at the end that he's dedicating this one to coke.
I think you might be wrong, Todd.
He says something, but in my mind, it's coke, and I couldn't make out what it was because the video you gave me, I couldn't turn on the subtitles.
All right. I don't think things were subtitled back then.
So I'm hoping...
In fear that the person doing the transcriptions would kill themselves.
Mm. So, he has his promo. It's out of control again. And then they go to the guy who's like, he's going to interview some people.
Like, let's get a few words from some of the participants in this evening's Royal Rumble.
Yeah, like, not the big names, like, but people who have aren't giving the chance. So as he's doing this, one of the medieval-themed wrestlers bumps into him and just grunts and keeps going. I'm not sure who it was, because there was a couple of them in the Rumble. There was a Barbarian. And
it was either Barbarian or Warlord.
Right, so
was he wearing a Phantom of the Opera mask with, like, a staff, or did he have antlers on?
I don't know, because they came through really quick. But I think he had brown furry trunks, so...
That's the Barbarian.
I can't be sure on this, because the announcer just looks at, like, looks off camera where he went, and that's the end of it. And then it's HBK in probably the greatest 80s garb I've ever seen.
This being 1992?
Yes, or 92, like that whole new wave.
Sure.
With the heart, with the broken heart on the chest of his jacket.
Right.
Which, I don't know if you know this, Joe, they call them the Heartbreak Kid.
What?
So I don't know if that's where he got it.
Like he got the jacket and then thought of the name, or thought right. of the name and then said, make me a jacket like this?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And I want it to remain a mystery, so don't tell me.
I'm not going to say nothing.
Right. So then he has his little promo, and then Bonesaw has his promo.
Right. The macho man.
Bonesaw. And he comes out, and once again, he's the second best wrestler to ever wear fringe.
Okay.
After Bailey. Bailey's the best fringe. And the feather in his hat, I just love Rainbow Pimp Macho Man Savage. It's fantastic. What? He's not?
He was the Macho Man.
Macho Man. He might have done a little cocaine too.
Allegedly.
I don't know, but I don't think... and he's talking about how he wants to get Jake the Snake and blah, blah, blah. So that happens. And then Sid Justice, who, you know, you've told me who he is, he's next. And all I get from his promo is that he's very, very sweaty. That's all I could notice while he's cutting his promo.
Right.
Then the big promo. The big promo, Joe. Do you know who's next on the promo?
You know what, Todd? I don't know who's next, but I know who's in these things. It's as though I pick these shows out specifically because I know there are things in there that you will like and love.
Yes.
It's the Repo Man.
Repo Man cuts a promo. And what's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine.
It's mine too!
Oh, fantastic. All I can think is he's going to try and sell me an O. Like from Sesame Street. He's like, hey, you want to buy an O? But he's talking about, and I'm over the top. I forgot that he had the like tire shoulder pads.
Right, and the jacket that had license plates on it.
Oh, and he has that in the coat. And I'm like, best promo ever. He's going to win the Rumble, Joe. He's my winner on favor to win the Rumble as this goes on. So then we go through a couple of other promos. Flair shows up. He's still on coke. Then we get to Paul Bearer and The Undertaker, who I forgot AJ Styles stole his gimmick of mittens, that he had gray mittens back then.
Okay.
That Undertaker was the original Mitten Man. I didn't remember that. And so, like, he has his promo. I'm like, all right, these are all good. I don't think he was coked up. I think he was more subdued.
Sure.
And then Hogan shows up, and he's wide-eyed. And he's talking about he's going to rumble all over you. I'm like, all right, Joe picked me a good, you know, at this point. I'm like, I've won on this pay-per-view. I don't need any more.
Like, if you turned it off there, you'd be like, I'm up for the evening.
Right. And then the Rumble happens.
Okay.
And at this point, Brain is slowly amped up to, like, being out of control because he wants to know where Flair is going in on the Rumble. Because I didn't realize at this point, but he had a... And I figured out he had a stake. Was
right.
He his manager?
He was Ric Flair's financial advisor.
Right. And he was like, I could. And Gorilla's like tweaking me. He was like, you could lose it all. And he's like, no, I'm going to win it all. I can't think like that, Gorilla. I can't. And I'm like, he amped it up to the Rumble. And then the Rumble happens. And I'm not going to go through everything.
Right.
But I was actually.
Highlights. There's highlights.
As it starts out with one and two, and it's British Bulldog.
And the Million Dollar Man.
And the Million Dollar Man. And they're going at it for a while. And then they announce wrestler number three, Joe. And I don't know if you know who wrestler number three is.
Todd, this might be one of the most memorable matches in wrestling history. So go ahead. Who's number three?
I know, I'm joking, because I know you told me you could probably tell me who all the entrances were at their number and when they were eliminated. That's like one of your...
Probably. I'm a little rusty. You know, I got other things on my mind these days. But it's Ric Flair.
So Flair comes in. And Brain goes crazy. like nobody's business. Nobody's business. Just goes off the rails. He's like, oh my God. And Gorilla's like, nobody's ever won from number three. One to five. Nobody. And Brain's like, no. Just like... make it stop. And I'm like, oh my God, this is hysterical. And he just keeps talking about how it's not fair to Flair. And there's the whole, you know, just all that going on. And basically there's a lot of, you know, in and out and people coming in and going until, you know, the ring is cleaned out.
He last eliminates the Big Boss Man, Ric Flair does.
Right, the Big Boss Man, which, by the way, I did not know that they had foam Big Boss Man sticks back in the day. Oh, my God, do they still sell those?
No.
Okay, because I kind of want one. But, so now it's like he's fighting his way, and he's just like, just get out, go under the bottom rope, take a rest, pace yourself. And I swear to God, Hina's going to have a heart attack. And then finally they're like, take a rest. Everybody's out there. He's like, take a rest. Who could be next? God, let it be somebody small. Whatever he's saying. And then, boom, and the bagpipes hit. And he's like, no! Like, oh, my God. Not fun. By the way, the coke is in full effect. Piper.
Oh, my God.
And they're going at it. And it's like somebody shot Heenan's dog and, you know, is trying to burn his family house down. And he's just going and going. And, you know, there's a beautiful eye gouge by Piper that's straight out of the Three Stooges.
Right. A lot of his offense was Three Stooges inspired, sure.
Was it really? Or are you just making fun of? Okay. Because it's fantastic. He does the eye gouge like just like a Three Stooge would do.
Right.
So then this is going on and they're fighting, and then there's, you know, and my favorite part is Jake the Snake runs in and Piper starts beating on Jake the Snake after he's beating on Flair. And Heenan literally says, thank you, Piper. It's not a kill. It's not a skirt. It's a kilt. You're the best. And then he turns around, and he hits Flair, and he goes, I lied. It is a skirt, not a kilt. And I'm like, what is happening? And Gorilla's telling him the whole time that he has to be objective. And I'm like, Gorilla, I don't see that happening. I don't see that happening for the rest of this match. Then, a bunch of people come in, IRS.
Right.
I didn't know about this guy, Irwin R. Scheister.
Correct.
Very lucky name for the job that he was in.
Also, his son, actually, I don't know if you know this, his sons are current World Wrestling Entertainment superstars.
Really? They are?
Yes. One of his sons is Bray Wyatt.
Okay.
His other son is Bo Dallas.
Oh my goodness. He fathered one of the Social Outcasts?
Yes.
That is a legacy wrestler that I respect. I'm not saying a bad thing about IRS.
All right, fair enough.
So we have The Undertaker. And at this time, Heenan's just yelling, they're not getting any smaller. They're just getting bigger. I'm like, oh, my God. And they were. They were getting bigger. So Macho Man comes in. He wants a piece of Jake the Snake, throws him over the top rope. And then Macho Man eliminates himself. Or does he? Because nobody seems to know at this point.
Right.
And then they're like, oh, well, he jumped over. Nobody threw him, so it's legal to get back in the ring. The ring. The refs aren't stopping it. So I'm like, okay, I don't know if that was a mistake or something, or that was planned. But I was very confused by the rules at this point. So that goes on. At this point, Heenan's yelling, weasel your way out of there, Flair. Never thought that I would say that I would use the word weasel, but do it. So I'm laughing at that. We have a couple of more wrestlers. Hogan comes out, comes running down. Now, at some point, a wrestler called Colonel Mustafa comes in.
Yes.
And he looks very familiar, Joe. Like, I know this guy from somewhere.
Right.
But I can't quite place it because he looks a little bit like the Iron Sheik, but that's not his name.
It is the Iron Sheik.
What?
It is the Iron Sheik.
No.
Yes.
That's not the Iron Sheik. He was working for Gaddafi at the time. Come on.
This was one of the last remnants of him being left over from when Sergeant Slaughter turned his back on the United States. And not only did Sergeant Slaughter, but Iron Sheik, they both became Iraqi sympathizers.
Okay. So while this is going on, people in, out, everything that's going on, Skinner shows up. There's a guy named Skinner.
Correct.
is he, and all I could think of as you're talking about that, that's Bo Dallas's father. Is Skinner Harper's father at all?
No.
They look exactly alike.
No.
I was looking at him like, is that Luke Harper's father?
No.
He's got a hanky in his back pocket.
The irony of that was about, oh boy, not even 10 years earlier, the man who played Skinner was a wrestler by the name of Steve Kern, who was doing a hot stud gimmick where he would wear like a little Speedo and bow tie to the ring.
Ah, bow ties are cool. It's like the 11th Doctor.
Right.
So now, basically, now is when everybody starts getting eliminated. And at this point, Heenan is begging for math problems to figure out how long Flair has been in there and how long Piper's been in there. And they keep saying he breaks the record and people just get cleaned out. And then it comes down to Hogan,
Sid and Ric Flair
and pushed out. Was it Hogan got pushed out first?
Sid gets pushed out first.
And then Sid pulls Hogan out over the top rope.
Right.
With the help of Ric Flair. And it's like Jesus has come to earth again for Flair. He goes, he doesn't even stay around to commentate anymore. He's like, I gotta go. So it's Gorilla all alone. And they go to that final promo with Flair.
Mr. Perfect.
Mr. Perfect, Mean Sid, Gene. And Mean Gene. And once again, after wrestling for, I don't know, an hour.
Yes.
Flair is very subdued. Completely subdued. At no point do I think he has any help with any of that energy. And the next thing that I will point out is, I don't know, they're just talking about how nobody thought they could do it, blah, blah, blah. And for some reason, Mean Gene yells, put that cigarette out. That's the way to me. The 1992 Regal Ruckus will end in my mind is Mean Gene telling someone to put that cigarette out.
So, Todd, I take it you enjoyed the Royal Rumble 1992.
I'm not playing it up. I hope I come off as genuine that I had a good time watching that pay-per-view.
Right. So, again, obviously, I picked that one for a reason. Because of all the wacky promos, because of all the wacky gimmicks, you know, cutting out a couple of the filler matches and things like that, of course, kind of helped move things along. But more so than that as well, there's a lot of that memorable stuff in there. That thing with Gene telling whoever it is off camera to put that cigarette out. Bobby Heenan's entire performance the entire time. You know, there's a lot of people that would always say, like, oh, that moment, that Royal Rumble is Ric Flair's defining thing in the WWF. And they're like, well, you know, it wouldn't be as good without Bobby Heenan doing the commentary on it. But as you point out, he's doing this the whole night. It's not just the Royal Rumble match. He's on the entire time.
Yes, and he is.
Some people would even go on to say that Bobby Heenan's call of the entire Royal Rumble event is the greatest performance in wrestling history.
Really?
There are people who will argue that fact because he does that shtick for, you know, what essentially is a 3-hour show.
Mm-hmm.
And he does not let up at any point. You know, there's ebbs and flows to it. You know, he's trying to figure things out. You know, he's having his usual fun, kind of taking the piss out of things. And then as he learns what's going on with a man that he has a financial stake in, then it goes all off the rails. And then it's a roller coaster from there as the match goes on. And then he keeps that up for an entire hour.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I can't believe like how he did that. That's my favorite part of it is the Heenan / Lester Part Gorilla Monsoon commentating.
Right. And, you know, they've done commentary teams. You know, there's people from that era who will say, you know, I'm more of a Jesse and Gorilla fan, or I'm more of a Jesse and Vince fan, or, you know, I enjoyed the times when Bobby and Vince would do things. But for my money, when it comes to professional wrestling duos, commentary or otherwise, it's Bobby and Gorilla, hands down.
Mm-hmm. Oof. I wish I did some cocaine before this, because I am winded, Joe.
Listen, that's why they're professionals, Todd. Because they get the pipeline.
Ugh. And now, after all that, I get to listen to you bury Patrick Troutman.
So I watched Doctor Who. Was okay. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
No, no, no. So, it was 6 episodes of something called Enemy of the World.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw you taking some flack or questioning why you chose this one.
Right.
So, I would guess that the reason that you chose this one is because this has, like, I wouldn't say, like, a kitschy element to it. I'm sure at the time it was like, oh, this is groundbreaking what they're doing here. But obviously, 50 years on, you're like, okay, it's the guy playing two different roles, right?
Mm-hmm. Which isn't the first time a doctor has played two different roles, and not the last. But go ahead.
Well, okay, so that's a good question. So here we are. We're at the second doctor. So now, again, I feel bad for this doctor. He looks just like a nondescript British person to me.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name again?
Patrick Troughton, the Cosmic Hobo Doctor.
Troughton.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm going to have to just sort of... So, has he done this before where he plays two roles, or did the guy before him do it?
A guy before him. The first Doctor, for like one episode, he played a monk like during the Spanish Inquisition, I think, or the French... Okay. Revolution or something like that. So this isn't the first time the Doctor has looked like another character.
Okay. So, they show up, they're on a beach, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll just, the Doctor, Troughton, whatever, he shows up and he sees the beach. And, like, all of a sudden he becomes like a small child where he strips down to his onesie
mm-hmm.
that he's wearing, which I guess was commonplace attire for elderly British men of the 60s. He gets in the ocean and then just gets back out, doesn't dry himself off, and puts his clothing on afterwards.
Yep.
He totally. Must have stunk.
Yes, he probably smelled like seaweed.
Okay. So then a bunch of guys who are straight out of a 50s Roger Corman-esque sci-fi movie show up, recognize the Doctor. We don't know why they recognize him just yet. And I like that they do this sort of thing where if this was a story to be told in 22 minutes or 44 minutes or whatever it is, you know, we'd have to know this information immediately. So they can kind of parse this information out to us to help add to, like, kind of the mystery of what's going on with all of this. So they start chasing after the Doctor and his two companions. Now, Todd, I think you mentioned to me, and if you did, you're the biggest liar in the world, when you had said that this season, this Doctor, these episodes, had a different director where they had more than one or two cameras.
No, I never said that they had more than two cameras.
I want to make sure that your lie is correct.
I did say that it wasn't all close-ups.
Todd, there were lots of close-ups. There was more close-ups in this than there was in the previous one.
Okay, there was more close-ups. My bad.
This was, the fact that you had told me beforehand, they're like, oh, there's not as many close-ups as there was in the last one. I'm like, oh, good. So I don't have to see giant close-ups on weird British people and their terrible teeth. Nope. Just as many as there was in the previous ones that you had me watch.
If not more, right?
If not more. So, it turns out, so they're chasing the Doctor and his companion. And they appear to just have, like, regular pistols
mm-hmm.
that alternate back and forth between making, like, ray gun pew-pew noises and regular bang noises for guns.
Hey, that's
very
quality
inconsistent
control.
Scene to scene.
Not Doctor Who.
I'm just saying. So then this woman with... And again, I can't say that it's a wig because that's just like the style of the time, but it was not a very flattering hairstyle for women of that era. And I say that era, which we'll get to as we're revealed that they're in some sort of future realm. So it turns out that the Doctor looks like this guy Salamander.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't really get a good glimpse or feel of who and what Salamander is in the video clip that we see of him speaking before the Galactic Senate, I guess.
Yes.
So, he's a guy who is, like, attempting to bring food to the world, but obviously he has evil motives. He's working things behind the scenes. You know, he apparently has control over natural disasters, which we'll find out more about later. But the Doctor bears a striking resemblance to him. And the guy that they meet up with, Kent?
Giles Kent, yes.
Okay. So, he concocts this scheme that, like, oh, well, if the Doctor poses Salamander, we'll replace Salamander and do something, right? The plan kind of falls apart a little bit from there. But it's like, no, hey, they look the same, because obviously it's the same actor playing him.
The plan is that he goes in and gets proof that Salamander's bad and they can oust him.
Right.
That's the plan.
Okay, because even though he knows and a lot of people know, it's unclear as to why they can't just tell someone. So they're going to go to where Salamander is, which, by the way, Todd, is only 2 hours by rocket.
Well, rocket is fast.
And they never show the rocket, of course. Now, at this point, we're at, like, this castle or something, where Salamander is, like, laying out his plans to replace the person who's in charge of this sector. And I'm not going to get into, like, oh, it's Australia, but they call it, like, Australia or something. I'm not going to get into all that shit.
Right.
Okay.
It's the future.
It's the future, Todd.
And there's zones. That's all you need to know.
Right. So he wants this... He wants to oust this one guy and put someone into the control of this zone that he can control and therefore continue his sphere of evil. The guy that he wants to put in there is like the proto-hipster of 2017, ironically. So it's also at this point that Troughton is essentially just doing a full-on Ricardo Montalban shtick as Salamander. In brown face, which I found personally offensive.
No, that it was just a filter on the camera, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, boy. Either way, Todd, I'm offended.
Can I just say something really quick?
Go ahead.
I don't know what I'm giving you for other doctors. Might not be the most racist thing you're going to see.
Oh, boy.
In a Doctor Who. Just saying.
Now, I will say, so while you say, you know, not the most racist thing, I will say this, that they had a lot of women in this, mm-hmm. and they gave the women a lot to do over the course of these six episodes, which unfortunately meant that the companion girl essentially had nothing to do.
Right. Victoria was short shrift.
Right. And then the other guy whose name I don't care about.
The Scottish guy? Jamie McCrimmon?
Right. So... it's just like, yeah, we're going to set up a thing where you save Salamander, and then that's how you're going to just become part of a security force, and then you're just going to kind of be there for the rest of the show. So, and again, I forget the future lady with the beehive hairdo.
Mm-hmm. I forget to.
What was that?
I forget to, but go ahead.
Right, so she's attempting to call back to Kent, and due to spot trouble...
Sunspots.
She's unable to connect to him. And I'm like, what is going on here? Sunspots, the future, all this sort of nonsense. So, I don't know what it is that Kent says. Oh no, he says a disused jetty.
Mm-hmm.
To which the Doctor questions, a disused yeti? Which was maybe the funniest moment in Doctor Who history.
Okay.
Forward and backwards. I don't know why that line just tickled me to no end.
Could I say something?
Go ahead.
It might have been the storyline before it or the one right before that. They fought giant robot yetis.
Okay.
So he's like, what? The yetis are back? He's like, no, a jetty. It's a jetty. Relax. It's all good. And I was surprised you didn't say it yeti, but that's okay.
You know what? Because I couldn't say yeti because, you know, it had to be yeti, jetty to rhyme with his mm-hmm. little thing that he did.
Mm-hmm.
So then when Victoria gets the job in the kitchen and he meets up with the with Faria?
Yes.
Who is a Salamander's food taster.
Right.
And there's a lot of food tasting play in this. Where, like, the one guy who's going to take over that Salamander's putting in, the proto-hipster guy, it's like, oh, I'm going to eat this. And he's like, I feel safe in eating this because obviously you've tested this. And she's like, I didn't test this. And he's like, what? And then he gets poison, and then he's going to put it in the salt. There's a lot of food taste and jokes, or threads in this, Todd. A lot of them.
Right.
So then they know... I'm just trying to get everything straightened out here in my head with the names of these guys. So with everything said and done, I'm sure you were aware, the star for me of this run of the show was Bennick. Bennick is fantastic. He's like a weird, creepy guy with a receding hairline and an ill-fitting jumpsuit, and he might be gay. It's really unclear because it is the future, and we don't know what any of that is like. So Bennick apparently is Salamander's right-hand man. Word gets back that Salamander was meeting up with Kent, but Salamander was really doing whatever it was that he was doing, so now he's trying to find that, and he knows that there's an imposter out there somewhere. He sends his goons to Kent's house, and they break his plates.
Yes.
And then they leave? I don't know. That was odd. And then the guy that they're going to kill off, whose name I escaped, they're like, oh, well, even though he's, you know, we're going to kill him and he's our prisoner, he gets any food that he wants or any entertainment that he wants or whatever it is. So he asks for, like, a book, right? Which would come into play later, because by simply dropping the book, that allows everyone to escape.
Yep.
And I'm like, come on.
Can I just say one thing? Bennick is a great character.
Okay.
But I really thought your favorite would have been a smaller role of Griff the Chef.
Nah, see, Griff the Chef kind of, he grated on me, just because, like, every one of his lines was how terrible the food that he's making is.
My favorite was, though, write the menu. He's like, first course, interrupted by a bombing. Second course, interrupted by... I love Griff.
Right.
But go ahead, sorry.
So, it turns out that Salamander is working, like, the most elaborate scheme in the history of the world. So he has these people that he has sequestered down in, like, a bunker underneath the Earth's core. And he goes down, and every time that he goes down there, they have to wash him of the radiation that's there.
Mm-hmm.
Because the above ground, where they cannot go due to nuclear war, is so irradiated. But for some reason, he's having them make all of these natural disasters. These are the people who are creating the natural disasters that Salamander has control over. They think he's a good guy. The rest of the world thinks he's a good guy. And this small group of people led by Kent, and Astrid, who's the woman with the beehive, as I'm going over my notes, they know Salamander's up to no good. But I don't think they realize how up to no good he really is.
Right.
They don't know how far this scheme goes. Needlessly elaborate is all I'm saying.
What? Fantastically elaborate.
Right. So, it turns out there's one guy, Colin, who's down there, right? There's two people who are down at the bunker. Colin and Mary specifically. There's a bunch of them, but Colin and Mary specifically. Colin is the one who really wants to go up to the Earth, He wants to go back up with Salamander. You know, it's been so long. We need to go up. And there's multiple times during the course of these episodes where these two have conversations that are pivotal to the plot that either one or both of them are off mic. And you can't hear what one or the other are saying. So just, I'm like, what? What's going on? I'm like, okay, I'll figure it out.
All right.
So just randomly on a box, Colin finds a newspaper. And the newspaper speaks of, like, a carnival cruise or something that's going on.
A holiday liner,
right? And then we find out, they don't say it ever. And they don't come and beat you in the head with. And I had to, like, freeze frame it to make sure. But this episode of Doctor Who takes place in the far-off year of 2017. And at that point, it made it all worthwhile for me.
Yes, because of the fact when they're in the helicopter.
Right.
When they're in the helicopter, it says that this helicopter's inspection is good for 1 year till the year 2018.
Okay, I missed that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I saw they focused long on that certificate, but I'm like, I didn't notice that part. I noticed, like, everything else that was on it. Okay. Right. So this is taking place in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So he confronts Salamander about this. One of the guys had gone up with Salamander, but Salamander, of course, is like, all right, well, I'm going to bring him up, and obviously I'm going to have to kill him and tell everyone else that, like, he died of radiation. Astrid finds him. In all of this, Faraya gets killed because Bennick has ordered all of the goons to just shoot anyone they see. And they do. They kill off his food taster, so the food tasting subplot goes nowhere. And then, I guess, so Kennick shows up. He gets the drop on Veronica, the doctor, and what's the male companion's name?
Jamie. So, and Victoria.
Okay, so here's what happens. Bennick has Victoria, right? And he has a gun next to her head. He then pushes her away into Jamie's arms. They have a few seconds back and forth, and he says, send the girl over to me. And Jamie's like, you better not lay a finger on her. And I'm thinking to myself, he just had her in his grasp, and he pushed her away. What the fuck?
He's playing cat and mouse. He's toying with them. Bennick is a monster.
He's a monster in a jumpsuit is what he is. So they get the jump on Bennick. And then this was kind of unclear. Does, like, Kent have an unexplained heel turn for some reason that he's going to, like, give them all up?
Kent.
I'm sorry, not Kennick. Kent.
Bennick is the guy that you like. Right, Kennick. Right. Kent is the guy who originally was like, we have to prove that Salamander is bad.
Right.
Well, you find out that Salamander and him were in it all the whole time. And he was the one who, Kent was the one who put all those people underground and started that program to build the natural disaster machines. And Salamander was like, I'm going to take it all for myself. So I'm just going to put this guy off to pasture. And he tells him the biggest mistake you ever made was not killing me because I knew what you were up to. And I was finding help to oust you. That's how he knew he was, like, his whole plan was because he wanted to. And then the doctor said, I knew you were bad all along because every time we came into trouble, you're like, kill them all. And he's like, I knew that you were to be watched, so I kept my eye on you.
I will say this. I drank a lot when I watched these episodes. It was more than the one beer I have a day. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of Jack Daniels that night. So just that might be why it was a little unclear.
Just because you have to do it to get through Doctor Who. I understand. Oh, boy.
It was really because I was out of my fancy root beer. And I'm like, oh, I've had a beer every night for like the last, you know, however many months it's been. I could handle a little Jack Daniels, and then a little became a lot. And then I was still drunk when I woke up the next morning.
Oh, my God.
So that might be why it gets a little unclear toward the end as to what Kent's motivations were.
Okay.
But then I do know that Salamander then reverses things and tries to trick Jamie and Veronica that he's the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, falls apart. We get that little battle. Now, Salamander definitely gets sucked out, but it's unclear if Jamie does. Like, Jamie's still holding on, and then the episode's over.
Right, which is, like, one of the few times that they do a straight cliffhanger into the next storyline.
Okay.
Which I forgot that's the way it ended. But basically, Jamie ends up getting to shut the door in the first few seconds of the next episode. And it's like, oh, we're all okay. Salamander's lost in the time stream. We're, you know, we're good to go now.
Right.
So that's how it all ends.
So because
Salamander made the TARDIS dematerialize with the door open.
Oh, okay.
Which they weren't supposed to do. Which doesn't matter later on in episodes, but apparently it does in this one.
Apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So again, this was not terrible. I enjoyed it, and like I said, I feel bad that I did get a little tipsy, or a lot tipsy, toward the end there, and I kind of missed some of the subtleties of what might or may or may not have been going on.
Mm-hmm.
But all in all, not terrible. Like, I didn't hate this. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't, like, mad that you made me watch it.
What a glowing review.
I'm just saying.
I know. But my thing was, there was other ones and people were telling me I should have picked those. The reason I picked this one is because of the fact that you get the stunning dual role. There's not a lot of Doctor. There's more Salamander.
Right. There was a lot of Salamander, which is fine because I thought he was fantastic.
Right. I figured. And of all the people, like, you have the kid in the bunker, Colin, who's like the whole Wayne and Wanda from the Muppets, you know, like, love story. And he's over the top, and Bennett's over the top, and even the guy with the stick who's the head of security is over the top. And I'm like, you know what? Joe said he liked, you know, the crazy Joker Aztec guy. Well, I'm going to give him an episode where everybody starts out on a 9. And there's a bunch of 10s rolling around. You know what I mean? So I figured you might like it. And in all actuality, I really like that storyline, the political humor, not the political, the political aspect of it, where I could have went with Doctor fights metallic robots in the future. And I was like, I don't know, but that episode didn't have as many wacky, it had one or two wacky characters. And I was like, let's just see if I throw them at him. And the fact that now that I know I might give you something in the future, that Bennett's character, not character, but actor, comes back, I think, 2 times in serial. So you might get hit that actor in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But, and the one thing I want to ask you is, did you recognize the guy who played Salamander / the Doctor at all? Did he look familiar?
Vaguely familiar. Like, I definitely knew him from somewhere.
Did you ever see a little movie called The Omen?
Oh, yes!
He's the guy who gets speared by the weather vane.
There you go.
That's what I was curious to see. Remember when I said I wanted to see if you would notice something? As a horror fan, I'm like, I wonder if he noticed that Patrick Troughton was in The Omen as, like, a Father Brennan or whatever his name is.
Now, I did notice that the guy who played Bennett was one of the Imperial, not, like, Imperial dudes in Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think you can cast a net over pretty much anyone from the first 900 episodes of Doctor Who and say, in one of the first 3 Star Wars, and the chances are more than likely yes.
There's an episode of the 3rd Doctor where the guy who plays Boba Fett is in it without the costume on for a bunch of episodes.
Jeremy Bullock or whatever his name
is? Yes, it is. He's in one of the episodes.
Oh, my goodness.
So,
a superstar by any name.
That's right. So Joe didn't hate the second Doctor.
It was good. Like I said, okay. I'm going into most of these with a bad mental state. Because it's Doctor Who, and I have a predilection to not like it.
Of course you do. Yes, I know.
And the first one that was built up to me by you and others that was not going to be good was enjoyable, like very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
So this one, not as enjoyable as the Aztecs, but still
good. Gotcha. Okay. So you're going to go up for a little bit, hopefully, and then right back down.
Okay,
when you
good.
When you get the later one, so we'll see.
All right.
Woo, I still need more Coke. I wish I had a bag with a snake in it to get it here.
To smuggle it through, sure. All right, everyone. Not a lot more preamble here. We had some preamble at the beginning, and these are going to be long episodes. The Gallifrey Birds episodes are going to be long, mm-hmm. You know, because we got a lot to unpack with these.
Yes, I ramble on during my wrestling.
No, listen, the wrestling stuff was some of the most enjoyable stuff that I've heard in quite some time when it comes to wrestling podcasts. Because Todd, I'm not sure if you noticed this, but most people who claim to be fans of professional wrestling, when they speak about it professionally into a microphone, are pretty negative about it.
Oh, wow. Well, you give me a bad one and I'll be negative.
I'll purposely give you a bad one next.
Okay.
Because there are bad ones out there, but I'm not really going to give you a bad one. So, closing out episode 118 of Longbox Heroes After Dark, for Todd, this is Joe, soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com, and we will catch you all here next week.